Midday Report on 702, your number one news and talk station.
Brings us to 7 minutes past 12. This is the Friday edition of the Midday Report on 702 in Cape Talk. I'm Thembe Gilemkgototo with you this afternoon. Coming up in the next hour, we'll bring you extended coverage of that ANC meeting by President Cyril Ramaphosa and officials in the Northwest Province. This as protests against Premier Suprama Humapelo continue in that part of the country. We'll also tell you about a media war that's brewing between independent newspapers and Diso Black Star. And then we'll touch base with our reporter Mia Lindeke. She's been tracking developments around those talks at the CCMA on the nationwide bus drivers' strike. All that and more coming up between now and 1 o'clock. But let's jump straight into our coverage of President Cyril Ramaphosa's trip to the Northwest. The ANC president due to meet with leaders in the Northwest as protests continue in Mahikeng and other parts of the province. Communities have taken to the streets this week over a lack of service delivery and are calling for Premier Suprama Humapelo to resign. The Mabana Community Centre and several vehicles were torched there overnight. Eyewitness News reporter Clement Mangatela is watching developments around that meeting with the president. Good afternoon to you, Clement. So when do we expect this meeting to begin?
That meeting, Temekile, is scheduled to start anytime from 12 midday. But as things stand now, I doubt that that will still be the case. I haven't seen the president, Cyril Ramaphosa, arriving here at Heritage House, where that meeting is expected to be underway. That's even though, of course, his motorcade was seen around the town of Mahikeng already.
Remind us then of the lines that have been drawn here, because Ramaphosa is going to meet with a very divided ANC, a very divided tripartite alliance.
So factional battles have been playing themselves here in the Northwest. You'll know of an organization called the Revolutionary Council that already earlier this year launched a campaign that they called Defend the Northwest or Protect the Northwest. And essentially they've been really alleging that there's corruption in the Northwest government, and they've been really calling essentially on Suprama Humapelo to step down. And I think that's exactly the conversation that will be in that meeting when Cyril Ramaphosa, together with other members of the ANC's top officials, are meeting the SACP, COSATU in the province as well. Now, the alliance partners have already indicated that they want Suprama Humapelo to be recalled by Ramaphosa. But I was speaking to the ANC in the province a short while ago, and they're saying their mandate in that meeting will be to defend the Northwest Premier. Obviously, this is more complicated than that. Suprama Humapelo came into office as, of course, elected through a provincial legislature. So if he's to be removed, it must be through that process as well. Unless the ANC, of course, takes that radical decision of instructing its provincial members of the council to vote against Humapelo, if he decides not to accept to resign, if, of course, that is an instruction from the ANC.
How is the opposition in the Northwest reflecting on the events of the past 3 days? Because we know the EFF had hoped to bring that motion of no confidence against Humapelo. That's now gone to court because they want to have it done by way of secret ballot. But what are the EFF and the DA and some of the other smaller parties saying?
Okay, Temekile, in fact, I'm going to answer that question now, but I just want to give you the latest that's happening outside Heritage House. I'm looking at that motorcade we're talking about. President, of course, Cyril Ramaphosa making his way into Heritage House, and I think we can expect that meeting now to officially begin, as I have seen many politicians also driving into Heritage House. So now that the president has arrived, I suspect that we're going to see that meeting beginning any minute from now. But to answer your question, the opposition parties have been, of course, leading the fight to obviously vote Humapelo out of office in the provincial legislature. We know that has now been postponed. They've gone to court to seek for a secret ballot. But the issue that they have here is that they need about 8 members of the provincial legislature that belong to the ANC to vote with them, because remember, out of the 33 seats in that provincial council, the ANC holds about 23. So the opposition parties will need about 8. And for them to do that, they will have to converse seriously and really push for ANC members to vote with them. Now, they're hoping to do that through that secret ballot, and that is why they've approached the courts to do so. But you also have people like Madoda Sambata, who is, of course, a member of the SACP, a leader of the SACP in the province, who's also part of the ANC in the provincial council. He's against the idea of voting Mahoma Pelu out of office through the provincial council and voting with the opposition, even though his party, the Communist Party, is pushing for Supra Mahoma Pelu to be ousted. So I think most of the leaders now are hoping for a political solution to this crisis in the Northwest. They are hoping that Cyril Ramaphosa, together with the top officials, will somehow be able to convince the Northwest Premier to step down, of course, being backed by the leaders from COSATU and the SACP. Whether Supra Mahoma Pelu will agree to that and whether Ramaphosa will be taking that position is what remains to be seen, Temekile.
That's Eyewitness News political reporter Clement Manyathela bringing us the latest on that meeting between President of the ANC, Cyril Ramaphosa, and party officials in the Northwest on day 3 of those service delivery and anti-Mahoma Pelu protests in that province. Someone who's been watching what's happening on the streets is another of our Eyewitness News reporters, Maschaba Sifularo. Maschaba, you've been out there with the protesters from last night, really. Are they showing any signs of slowing down?
Tembegile, it looks as though people are slowing down because there is a heavy police presence on the streets of Mahikeng. However, it is difficult to navigate one's way through the town because the roads are still barricaded with rubble and burning tires. Earlier in Siweding, protesters who had looted a hardware store in the area were shot at with rubber bullets by the cops. They are now at what looks like a standoff with the cops, waiting for them to leave, I guess, so that they can finish what they started in the store.
Are some of the protesters in any way deterred by the elements of criminality which we've now seen creep into this? We saw the Mabana Youth Center being torched overnight, a number of vehicles also set alight. Have they been talking about that at all?
Tamila, the people that we spoke to on the ground have said that this is the behavior of people who lack leadership. They say that Supra Mahoma Pelu has been unable to deliver basic services to them, and what they are doing is basically getting what is theirs back. Of course, that the acts of criminality have been strongly condemned by a lot of the bodies in this province, including the ANC Women's League, who say that it is incorrect to be allowing children onto the streets to get involved in these kind of protests, and also deny them a right to education. As you may know, schools have been closed since the protest began on this side. But again, Timbegi, the protesters are saying that they are not going to stop until they get what they want, which is for Supra Mahoma Pelu to step down.
Do they have high hopes ahead of this meeting with President Ramaphosa? Do they think it'll result in anything useful?
I believe that the residents, I mean, from some of the conversations that we've been having with them, that they are very hopeful that President Cyril Ramaphosa will bring a solid resolution to the problems in the province. They've complained for quite a while now that the national leadership of the African National Congress has not been heeding their call for an intervention. I suppose they are happy and relieved now that the intervention is here, but they're also saying that they will not accept anything less than a recall of Premier Supra Mahoma Pelu as the leader of the province.
And as far as their list of demands, have they added any other things apart from Supra Mahoma Pelu's exit and issues around service delivery?
I've not heard anything on the ground from the residents, but I do know that unions such as Nahau, Hospesa and Denosa about a week ago vowed to intensify a service delivery strike that they have been on for quite a while now. On the 20th of March, they submitted a memorandum of demands to the Premier in which they called for the suspension of HOD Tabula Kalakala, which happened yesterday, as you may know. But amongst other things is an end to corruption, because there are some MECs who have been also facing allegations of corruption. There are some HODs themselves who have been facing allegations of corruption. They've also called for the end of outsourcing of government services. They've referred to things such as labor brokering. One of the reasons that is there's a strike at the Mabatu medical stores, which has made it impossible for medications to reach facilities across the province, is that the complaint of other people who have been brought into the system that are basically shadowing them and copying their work and getting paid more than what they are. And they have been denied, they say, performance bonuses because of that.
And lastly, any update on the number of people arrested?
I have not been in contact with the police, Thembekile, but police spokesperson Sabata Mokgwabona earlier said that they would do everything in their power to ensure that they contain the situation on the ground and deter the violent protests and also stop people from looting and destroying property.
Eyewitness News reporter Maschaba Sifularo live for us in Mahikeng this afternoon, where those protests have entered a third day. Let's continue to get reaction and bring in Nehau's provincial secretary in the Northwest. That's Patrick Magafane. A very good afternoon to you, Ndata Magafane. So here we are now, day three into these protests. Do you think this is it for Supra Mahumapelo?
Thank you very much for having us out there at home. Look, we have been making this call that we think that things have gotten from bad to worse so far as governance is concerned in the Northwest Province. You have grievances of workers lying all over the place and they are not being addressed. You have a government that is now characterized or engulfed in corruption scandals, all under the watch of the Premier Supra Mahumapelo, and hence, there was no any other better solution. If you check at the how the grievances of the workers have grown, it's as a result of some parallel operation that you have MECs that are supposed to be in charge of the departments, but yet they do not have powers over certain things, in fact, many of the things. And you have HODs that have powers more than the MECs. And when you try to check and to consolidate as that the department must speak in one voice, you are then slapped in the face by the arrogance of most of the HODs, in particular the Health Department HOD, who has been a topic, a burning issue in the society. Now, all these things are as a result of the HODs having a direct line with the Premier, who has obviously characterized himself as a person, in our view, that is anti-workers and anti-unions in the public service. And therefore, I think that just proving that it's not only workers that have a concern about the Premier himself. It does appear that members of the community for some time has also suppressed their own views around the issue of governance in the Northwest Province. Hence, we see now the eruption of the protests that we have just seen that are still continuing. And it's just a symptom or a voice of the masses that are saying, no, we think that it's now time for a change in the office of the Premier in the Northwest Province. And we hope that today's meeting, the political meeting that is happening today, will actually choose majority instead of few individuals and do and present a solution that is best suitable to the people of the Northwest Province.
Let's talk about you as health workers. I'm glad you brought up the point about HODs who you say have too much power in the province. Are you at all encouraged then by Thabo Lekala's suspension as health HOD, or are there more people whom you'd like to see suspended or even fired?
Look, Thabo Lekala is but one element of the things that are a problem in the Northwest Province, particularly corruption. So you cannot then celebrate when just one person has been suspended or put aside. You've got to have a process of entering into a serious process of cleaning corruption in governance generally, and ensure that for once we give our people what is called a clean governance, which will then culminate into quality service to our people, which will then result into a stable province and a stable workplace that everybody's focused on what really they are employed to do. So we can't then say that Thabo Lekala alone something that has been a negative aspect in the governance of the Northwest Province. You have multiple corruption scandals in the Northwest Province. Surely the political meeting must also consider into that aspect and say, but how do we then have an independent, credible body that will actually clean the government in the Northwest and ensure that we've got a corruption-free government and therefore a corrupt-free society in the Northwest Province. So encourage, maybe yes, but it's a little bit too late. I am sure that you know that the HOD suspension has been one of the major demands of the union called Nehau. And had that been addressed earlier, rather than waiting for the eruption of the protest that is now taking over at the town in Mafikeng, I'm sure now we'll be speaking a little bit more regrettable story, other than that we are seeing now, that in fact it's now reported that we have lost one person, whether it's in relation to the protest or what. we're not sure. So these ugly scenes that you see, it's a case of the leadership deliberately ignoring the reality of the situation, the reality of the fact that workers are not happy, the reality of the fact that the society members are not happy themselves, and thus you have this particular unfortunate situation. So we cannot then say that the suspension of Likala Kala brings an end to the corruption generally or many other managerial problems that we have. We think that there must be a more intensified action to clean the government.
Patrick, very quickly, you've brought up the loss of life. This one person who some are saying was shot during those demonstrations, some saying a completely different story altogether. You have been blamed as Nehau for the deaths of two people who apparently died in or around health facilities there in the Northwest during your strike. Do you feel any guilt at all? Do you take responsibility at any level for that?
Look, we feel very sad that there are lives that are lost in the process. We are only human, and we do not want to sound in the media that we are sensationalizing whatever problem that we have in the expense of the life of the people. But people must then accept that as members of the society, they have members, are members of the society as well. You can't detach them from the broader society. So the moment they enter into the workplace, they then have an access to what is called labor rights themselves, which they are entitled to in terms of the Constitution of the Republic. And therefore, from time to time, they'll exercise those, particularly when you've got grievances that are dating back to 4 years back, and management and the political leadership had no appetite or had no positive attitude in addressing the issues. You will then have a situation that culminates into this bad scenario.
And, so in short, Patrick, because we are out of time, in short, you do not take any responsibility for those deaths?
No, we can't. There's no way. The employer ought to have provided means of ensuring that people are covered in terms of the health services.
Okay, let's leave it there. That's Nehau Northwest Provincial Secretary Patrick Magafane bringing us the union's take on what's been developing in that province over the last few days. You'd remember a month ago already they were calling for the departure of Northwest Premier Supra Mahumapelo.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
26 minutes past 12 on the Midday Report. You're with 702 and Cape Talk. We continue with our extended coverage of that meeting between ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa and officials from the ANC and the Tripartite Alliance in the Northwest after days of protests around issues of service delivery and some people calling for the sacking of Northwest Premier Supra Mahumapelo, who also has to deal, if he doesn't leave by way of an ANC political solution, he may be voted out, I should say, I beg your pardon, through a motion of no confidence that has been sponsored by the EFF. Let's get analysis on this now. And to help us do that is political analyst Dumisani Khope, who joins us on the phone from Johannesburg. A very good afternoon to you, Mr. Khope. So here we are today. What do you think this meeting with Cyril Ramaphosa is going to achieve?
Well, I think the first thing, good afternoon to you and to the listeners. I think the first thing that he's likely to try to do is to smooth over the differences between the factions that are in conflict within the ANC. But he has to tread very carefully, because this is an issue which primarily is an internal political matter within the ANC, and therefore he has to wear an ANC leadership head, and yet at the same time, by the virtue of Supra being the premier of the province and you know, the protests being seen to be citizen driven, at the same time he has to wear his cap, you know, as the state president responsible of ensuring that there's peace and stability. But I think the main thing that he's going to try to do is to find an amicable consensus across the warring parties and establish stability.
But the line drawn by locals then, some members of the ANC and the Alliance, is quite clear. It's a Supra exit or no other deal. So how does Ramaphosa then begin to work around that?
Well, that may be their starting point, but it may not necessarily be what they get out of the meeting. Part of me, I suspect that is more than likely to have some kind of a structural commission instituted to go through what, you know, the contesting parties are, the tensions that they are going through about. So I don't see an absolute decision that says the Supra must resign from the president neither do I think that he's going to resign, with an immediate effect. I suspect there could be some structure which is established to investigate what is going on. But the horrible thing, though, for the ANC is that this will not necessarily end today. Chances are it will have a bearing on how people vote in that particular province if the ANC does not act according, against the Premier.
I'm curious to hear, Mr. Hlophe, what you think about the fact that Ace Magashule and JC Duarte did go to Mahikeng at the very start of these protests, and then it's now taken Cyril Ramaphosa returning from an official visit abroad to try and resolve this issue. What does that say about the influence of the other leaders who we've already seen in the Northwest this week?
Well, the biggest problem is that I think it sets quite a bad precedence for Cyril Ramaphosa, because it means in most cases whenever there are conflicts somewhere, everywhere in the country, he has to go there and deal with the issue himself, well, together with the leadership that he leads. So the very fact that he had to cut short his UK trip to deal with this matter, it raises question about the collective leadership that he leads, both at the party level as well at the state level. So it sets a very horrible precedent, because it means if you check at the tensions in KZN, it means if something starts boiling to the street, then Cyril Ramaphosa will have to rush there and deal with the matter. So it's not, on the face value, it's good that the president confronts challenges, head on. But at the same time, I think it's a serious bad precedence that means that, the collective of the ANC cannot deal with the matter in the absence of their own president.
All right. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
That there was Dumisani Hlophe, political analyst from the UNISA School of Governance. Brings us to 12:02
and Cape Talk.
The Midday Report.
Brings us to 12:39. This is the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk. Always interested to hear from you. Do send us an SMS on 31702 and 31567 if you have any thoughts on some of the discussions that we've had so far in the hour. Another story that's made headlines today is this. The Independent Newspapers Group claiming that Diso Black Star executives wanted to influence stakeholders to stop the listing of the company in an involvement with a deal there. Now, this was allegedly done through a series of articles which were misrepresenting Independent's financial position. The group has likened the alleged campaign to tactics by the apartheid-era Stratcom unit. One of the journalists who were allegedly being used to sabotage the Sagamatha deal is Sam Sol. He is from the Amabungane Center for Investigative Journalism and joins us now on the line. So, a very good afternoon to you, Sam. Were you engaged in a dirty tactics program here?
No. I mean, if anybody is involved in a Stratcom-like project, it's unfortunately Independent Newspapers. Propaganda that they published this morning really has all the hallmarks of that kind of operation, which is intended to achieve a political and financial results, not based on any facts, based on incorrect inferences and so on. So I think it's very unfortunate for journalism that this once proud media group has been hijacked to these ends. I wrote about the pre-listing statement of Sagamatha, which was the vehicle that was going to take over the 55% ownership of Independent Newspapers. What I wrote was based on their own pre-listing statement. I operated independently of Tiso Black Star. I've got no interest in Tiso Black Star or their financial problems should they exist. So there's this whole conspiracy theory that's been woven together. and presented as journalism, which is unfortunate.
So why would independent newspapers want to wage a propaganda war against Diso Black Star?
Look, I think that what prompted this were two things, one was the attempt to list Saga Mata. What we raised in relation to Saga Mata was the fact that the underlying companies were not making money. And if they wanted to be listed on the Joburg Stock Exchange and raise cash that way, good luck to them. But there was an attempt to get the Public Investment Corporation, to put in billions of rands at a very high share price for this company, and in effect subsidize its listing. And we raised questions about that, and it seems that raising questions about that gave the Public Investment Corporation pause to think twice about its decision, and it decided not to go ahead. I think this latest attack on us follows follow-up questions that we put to the executive chairman of independent newspapers, Dr. Survey, relating to another deal and listing, an earlier one, with the involvement of the Public Investment Corporation, which actually did go ahead. There are similar questions to be asked about the value to government employees, to their pension fund, and the sense of the investment.
Looking at this story today on in all the papers that belong to independent newspapers, and reflecting on the coverage that you've done on the Saga Mata deal, do you think there's anything you could have done differently?
Look, it's not clear to me. The substance of what I wrote, has not really been attacked. It was a very detailed article looking at the 212-page pre-listing statement. And mostly the attack has been ad hominem in terms of, comparing, asking difficult questions about Saga Mata and about Dr. Survey's business to, a Stratcom operation, to apartheid-era operations. So it's been that kind of attack rather than an attack on the facts.
Where to from here? Will you be taking them up on these claims?
I think our first duty is to carry on with the journalism and to complete the follow-up story that we're working on, and that's what we're going to do. Whether we respond in any other way, that'll have to wait until the journalism is done.
Sam Saul, journalist at the Amabungane Center for Investigative Journalism, thank you for your time. Just to let you know, Sam was speaking to us there about an article today in all the independent newspapers accusing Diso Black Star of plotting to scupper the listing of Saga Mata Technologies on the JSE, a deal linked to independent newspapers. We did reach out to them to try and get them on the program today to respond to some of the allegations that are now being made against them and the allegations that they've made against Diso Black Star, but we've so far been unsuccessful. That brings us to 12:45. This is the Midday Report.
The Midday Report.
It's 12:48 on the Midday Report. Talks to end the nationwide bus driver strike are continuing at the CCMA this afternoon. It's the second day of those negotiations after a strike that started on Wednesday. Workers are demanding a 12% wage increase while bosses are offering 7%. Eyewitness News reporter Mia Lindeke is here to give us an update. So Mia, are we any closer to a deal, or is the strike likely to carry on into the weekend?
Temikile, it's still unclear at this moment. Both parties remain very tight-lipped about what is happening there behind closed doors. It is not clear if there is a new offer on the table from either parties. Unions are keeping a close eye to the chest, which means there might be something, but for now they are not revealing anything to the media, and I think they don't want to break that trust relationship between parties, because there is the CCMA who's facilitating everything, and everything is going according to plan at the moment. But you have to understand that the gap is big. So either party has to make some change in order to close that almost 7% gap. And then there is also next week, a long weekend. So people need to move on and they need to make an alternative plans. So I think they're very pressed for time. I spoke to NUMSA's Ivan Jim, who said to me that they understand the importance of making sure that they resolve this before the weekend. So I assume that they might just sit into the late hours of tonight if there is no specific settlement on the table by this afternoon.
You talk about alternative plans. Do we know what the bus companies are planning to do should this strike extend into next week?
No, not at this moment. They don't have any plans, which is obviously playing in the favor of the unions, because now with commuters stranded, they feel the impact and obviously the financial impact as well. They don't get that it's almost 3 days now, and they're feeling the financial impact. And like I mentioned, the long weekend is coming in, coming on, and usually these buses, they actually cash in. People want to go far. They want to travel home. So they go to miss out if they don't resolve this as soon as possible.
In Cape Town today, train delays added, I understand, to the transport nightmare.
That's correct. Metro Rail experienced massive delays this morning during that peak hour, about 60 minutes in Cape Town. And the train drivers are actually feeling the impact now. In some instances, they have to wake up earlier, they have to work longer shifts, and they're feeling the pressure. Yesterday, we also spoke to the taxi industry, where taxi drivers say that they're also feeling the impact. They've been pressured by commuters to take in more passengers, and it's also compromising the safety of other commuters. So I think everyone is feeling the impact, and there's a lot of pressure on that room in Woodmead to end the strike as soon as possible.
That's EWN reporter Mia Lindeke bringing us the latest on the nationwide bus driver's strike.
Day Report on your number one news and talk station.
So you may have heard, two prison guards are due to appear in a Johannesburg court today after they were arrested for allegedly helping a group of inmates escape from Sun City Prison. The men, 16 of them, broke free 2 weeks ago. Two were later killed in a shootout with police in KwaZulu-Natal. That was last week. We're going to talk now about this with Colonel Lungelo Dlamini. He is spokesperson for the Gauteng SAPS. A very good afternoon to you, Colonel Dlamini. So what information did you rely on to make these arrests?
The details of these allegations of assisting the prisoners to escape cannot be given out. They are part of evidence that will be given at court. If we give out the details, it can negatively affect our evidence at court.
It's deeply troubling, though, Colonel Dlamini, that whenever we have issues of prison breaks and the like, very often it's either a correctional service official or a member of the SAPS involved.
That depends on the investigation, how the prisoners escape. But in this instance, the correctional services, on our investigation, we discovered that these two warders took part in assisting these prisoners to escape. That's why they were arrested. We have taken them to court today on those allegations.
What charges will they face?
They will be facing charges of assisting the prisoner to escape.
Are you then looking into some of the other correctional service officials at this Sun City prison?
Well, the investigation is still continuing at this stage. I cannot say whether there are any other members that were involved, but as we are continuing with our investigation, that can come out if there were any other members that were involved.
What are you and correctional services doing, Colonel Dlamini, to put a stop to correctional service officials and members of the SAPS being involved in such incidents?
I believe the correctional services have got policies which have been drafted to prevent the escape of the prisoners. Also, the SAPS, we have got instructions that are given to the members that that are used to prevent the escape of the prisoners. But if those instructions are not complied with, or we establish that it was the negligence of the members that the prisoners escaped, we charge them internally. And in some instances, this can result in the members being discharged from the service.
How far are you from recapturing the 14 of those 16 inmates who broke free?
Well, seven of those prisoners have been found. Two, they were killed in KZN, and five, they have been rearrested. We hope that the other nine prisoners who are still at large will be brought to book very soon.
The Midday Report on your number one news and talk station.
4 minutes to one on the Midday Report on 702 in Cape Talk. So nursing students have marched on the Gauteng Health Department's offices this week. They claim they've not received textbooks for this academic year and have been mistreated due to the government bursary system. We're going to get more on this with the Chief Director for Nursing, Joanna Moore, who joins us on the line this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Joanna. So just why had some students not received study material like textbooks 4 months into the year?
Okay, thank you very much. The students are right in that they have not received study material, which they were supposed to have received the money for it in January. And then they brought it to our attention, and then the department is currently working on it. But that does not mean that completely there was nothing that the colleges were not doing. The colleges had made photocopies, but it is only fair that they must have the entire textbook. So I think that's where we are at. And then at this point in time, we are far advanced for them to be receiving monies into their accounts, and then so that they can begin to purchase for themselves. But there are plans that the colleges had put in place in order to make sure that we continue to teach them.
Let's be clear, though. These photocopies that you're referring to, according to reports in the media, were only given to students days before their exams. So it wasn't a great plan to begin with.
No, as far as I'm concerned, none of the students have written any exams that they had not studied for. Because where we are at, there's a catch-up plan that we are working on where some of the exams are being rescheduled so that they're able to have enough time to study following the tools down that happened.
Okay, so some students are also complaining about being forced to both study and work full-time at hospitals due to a change in your system somewhere between first and second year. Explain that to us.
Okay. Yeah, actually, nobody is forced to work in the hospital. If you look at the South African Nursing Council regulations, they actually prescribe how much time each student should spend for each level of year that they are trained. For example, if you are a first year, you are expected to spend 30% of your time in a college doing theory, and then when you go to the hospital or clinic, it's 70% of your time learning to implement what you learned in the class. For example, we teach you how to wash a baby, how to wash an adult, how to take a temperature, how to feed a helpless patient. So for you to be able to do that, when you've learned it from the book, then you go and feed a helpless patient in a ward. So that is not working per se. It is learning. It's clinical experience. And then there are a number of hours that have been allocated for each a level of training. And then because nursing is a doing thing, you do it in order for you to understand and be able to continue to do it up until your dexterity in terms of doing the procedures has been refined.
Okay.
So not working per se.
All right, Joanna More is the Chief Director for Nursing at the Gauteng Health Department. Thank you for speaking to us. That does it for the Midday Report for this week.